And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A key way to get that sought-after savory umami flavor, MSG, is also the subject of a number of stereotypes, many of them revolving around Asian cuisine. But there's a lot more to MSG than those misconceptions. As part of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, Cincinnati State Culinary and Food Science Program Chair Grace Yak joined Cincinnati Edition to preview a talk she'll be giving on Saturday in partnership with the Cincinnati Museum Center, breaking down the history, cultural context, science, and many uses of MSG. Grace Yak is with us now. Grace, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Well, let's start with something very basic. What is MSG?
Yeah, that's a great question. MSG is simply the sodium salt of glutamic acid, the very building block of proteins. Glutamates are naturally present in our bodies and foods that we eat, such as cheese, tomato, mushrooms, and breast milk. Yes, even breast milk. So from a very early age, we have been exposed to glutamates and have learn to like that particular taste. So MSG is simply the purified form of glutamates. In terms of the molecule and how our body metabolizes MSG, it really is no different from how our body treats naturally occurring glutamates. So I guess an analogy might be, we consume naturally occurring sodium in foods, but when we consume salt, we're consuming sodium chloride.
Why do we associate MSG then so much with Asian cuisine?
Well, the story of MSG is really as old as seaweed, specifically kombu. So kombu is an ingredient in the making of dashi, a type of Japanese stock that's used in miso soup and okonomiyaki, which is a type of savory pancakes. So at the turn of the 20th century, a Japanese chemist by the name of Kikone Ikeda found that kombu was especially rich in MSG. And in fact, if you look at kombu, you might even discover crystals on the surface of the dried kelp. So he also found that MSG, which is rich in kombu, imparted a unique taste sensation, which he described as umami. It is different as what was known then as taste sensations, the sweet, salty, sour, and bitter. And it wasn't until some decades later in, I believe, 2001, a biologist at the University of California in San Diego proved conclusively that humans, in fact, do have a specific taste receptor for MSG. And so umami became legitimately the fifth taste sensation. So, you know, from its origins in the Far East, and its production from in the Far East, that's how it's become affiliated with Asian foods.
We're talking with Grace Yak, the program chair at Cincinnati State Culinary and Food Science Department. And Grace, I'd like for you to just tell us a little bit about what Chinese restaurant syndrome is.
That's a great question, and there's a lot to unpack here. So just a little bit of background. People have consumed MSG for a long time, but the debate over its health effects really began in 1968, when a man wrote a letter to the New England Journal of Medicine complaining of symptoms like numbness after eating at Chinese restaurants. And so that's how the origins of the syndrome, Chinese restaurant syndromes, started. Nowadays, it's become associated with the ill effects of eating at Chinese restaurants because of the addition of MSG.
And these are some of the, what you would characterize then as stereotypes. These are not accurate understandings of the way this ingredient has an effect on us when we consume these foods?
I definitely think there is a lack of understanding of what glutamate is and why it is really predominant in many, many foods, not just foods served in Chinese restaurants. So, for example, mainstream foods such as ranch dressing, snack foods like Doritos, Pringles, even Popeye's chicken, Chick-fil-A. All those foods do have added MSG. It's really not a secret. All you got to do is go to their websites, and they do declare MSG in their ingredient statements. So there's a little bit of irony in that you don't really hear a widespread reports of these symptoms associated with Chinese restaurant syndrome, symptoms such as headaches, heart palpitations, numbness, and things of that nature. So there's a little bit of that irony there. And also, I do think that, just the understanding of what glutamate really is and that it is naturally occurring in foods that we eat every day.
We're talking with Grace Yack, Cincinnati State Culinary and Food Science Program Chair. She'll be giving a talk on Saturday in partnership with the Cincinnati Museum Center to break down the history, cultural context, science, and many uses of MSG. We've got details at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Well, Grace, I have to ask then, is the negative associations of MSG in Chinese food, whereas it's not really discussed as being an ingredient in the foods you just referenced, whether it be chips or other fast food chains, is there a racist component involved?
Well, some of the celebrity chefs have not been shy about being vocal about the racial undertones. For example, Eddie Huang, whose memoir was adapted into the sitcom Fresh Off the Boat, has called Chinese restaurant syndrome ignorant. Superstar chef David Chang has pretty much said that the fears surrounding MSG are just a psychosomatic myth. So, I mean, there are other, opinions by the celebrity chefs about MSG. I think the truth is somewhere in between, like many other things in life. I don't think everybody who's ever experienced headaches and heart palpitations are simply making it up. I do think that perhaps this could be a matter of sensitivity and threshold. So, in the 1990s, the Food and Drug Administration did conduct an independent scientific investigation into the mounting reports of these syndromes of the symptoms from eating at Chinese restaurants. And the group came back, this independent scientific group came back with the conclusion that MSG was safe. However, they did acknowledge some transient mild symptoms, such as the headaches and palpitations in some sensitive individuals, namely those who consumed 3 grams or more of added MSG on an empty stomach. So I think it's also important to put that in context. So the typical serving of food with added MSG normally amounts to about 0.5 gram. So for someone to consume 3 grams in one sitting is not to say impossible, but it's unlikely. And also keep in mind, the average adult consumes approximately 13 grams of glutamate each day just from naturally occurring glutamates in food. And their average intake of MSG probably amounts to about 0.5 grams a day.
Grace, I understand you grew up in Malaysia and you used MSG there. What was the feeling about MSG in your Asian country?
Well, the even as far as Malaysia, and in particular in the Far East, MSG is used, but it is not regarded as something that you reach for if you truly have the culinary chops. Okay, so this is very much the perspective of chefs or cooks who have culinary prowess to show. So cooks or chefs typically avoid MSG, not because of fear of health concerns, you know, like headaches, but more so because they are truly interested in creating layers of flavor through the use of different ingredients, aromatics, cooking techniques to come up with a more full flavored product. So reaching for this white powder MSG is sometimes, maybe many times, considered a little bit of a crutch, and might even be snubbed because you lack the culinary prowess, not so much because of headaches or other health concerns.
Interesting. And I understand, again, we're talking with Grace Yeck, Cincinnati State Culinary and Food Science Program Chair, who is giving a presentation on Saturday in partnership with the Cincinnati Museum Center. You will be cooking in this presentation called The Truth About MSG, and I understand it'll be some pancake.
Yes. So, actually, Michael, if I may, just add, the event is on Wednesday, with the Cincinnati Museum Center. So it will be a virtual event
It's on
Wednesday, starting.
Wednesday.
Yes.
Oh, I've
At
been saying the
7
wrong.
p.m.
Okay, my apologies. I had the wrong date on here, but it's
No
Wednesday.
worries.
That's the
No
19th,
worries.
this week, the
Yes, it
19th.
is.
Wednesday, the 19th at 7 p.m. Let me write
7
that down. I've
p.m.
only said it four times since we've started this. I appreciate you correcting me now. Again, May
Oh.
17th, and we will adjust our web post to make sure that that is correct as well. Anyway, please proceed, and
Yeah.
my apologies
So,
for that.
no worries. So this Wednesday at 7 p.m., we will be having a virtual event. It's called Cooking and Conversation. So we'll talk about MSG while I demonstrate the making of okonomiyaki, which is a type of Japanese savory pancake. So it is, as its name suggests, it's basically a pancake which has ingredients of your favorite ingredients, you know, okonomi meaning your favorite things. So it's a little bit free form, but the thing that I wanted to underscore about this recipe or this dish is the use of dashi stock in the making of this pancake batter. So typically the liquid used in the making of a batter could be, you know, simply water or chicken stock. In this case, true to its Japanese origin, I will be using dashi. And it just so happens that dashi is made with kombu, that sea kelp that I had mentioned a little while ago, that the Japanese chemists found to be rich in glutamates, along with katsuobushi, which is a type of tuna or bonito flakes. So this liquid, which is packed with umami flavor, will be used as liquid for making this pancake batter. And then in addition, you know, we have the so-called fillings, which I will use mushroom, which is also packed in glutamates. And once the pancake is done with the fillings, fried up, crispy on the outside, just yummy on the inside, I'm going to top it off with very traditional toppings such as okonomiyaki sauce, along with a type of Japanese mayo called kewpie. So this ingredient is rich in glutamates because guess what? It is tastier than its American counterpart because it has something called MSG in it. So kewpie or this Japanese mayonnaise is legitimately thicker. It's more custardy and more luxurious than the American counterpart. And of course, additionally, it's just a little bit tastier. It has gained a little bit of a cult following with the chefs in recent years. It's you know, instead of mayonnaise, you use kewpie mayonnaise. So throughout this recipe of okonomiyaki, the layering of glutamates, it's more or less a phased organic process. It's not, I'm not even reaching for the white powder MSG to just kind of sprinkle on. It's built in, and such is the beauty of this particular dish as a demonstration of the umami taste.
And you're going to explain to people who participate in this virtual event why we crave MSG, right?
Yeah, so the cravability, I would actually point all the way back to when we were infants, being nurtured by our mother's milk, right? Our breast milk is in fact laden with glutamates. So from a very early age, we have learned to like it. So, human memory is such that it's like riding a bicycle, right? So once you've been introduced to something, if there is a reoccurrence of it, that memory is pretty instant, and so is the liking for such things as glutamates.
Do you explore Asian cuisine in your role at Cincinnati State's Culinary and Food Science program?
Oh yes, of course we do. I personally teach a class called International Cuisine, where we so-called travel the globe to explore cuisines and cultures from around the world. And of course, part of the cuisine and culture we explore is that from Asia, South Asia, India, Sri Lanka, Southeast Asia, sort of the crossroads with the Far East, such as China, Japan, Korea. And in other classes too, the world of food has become so global. It's really hard to escape global influences in our contemporary cuisine.
Indeed. So this is a reminder that Grace Yack, the Cincinnati State Culinary and Food Science Program Chair, will be giving a presentation in partnership with the Cincinnati Museum Center, breaking down the history, cultural context, science, and many uses of MSG. It's all part of Asian Pacific American Heritage Month. And this event is Wednesday, May 19th at 7 p.m. We will have a link at wvxu.org. Inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. Do we have the date right now, Grace? Is it Wednesday, May 19th at 7 p.m.?
It's perfect.
Well, we look forward to those perfect pancakes as well. Grace, thank you so much for the time you gave us, and we'll look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. I am seeing posters on social media share pictures of cicadas emerging in our region. That must mean they are here. If you're still not ready, still feel like you have to learn something about these cicadas in order to prepare, go to wvxu.org and listen to the parts of our 10-part podcast series hosted by our Corey Sharber alongside Mount St. Joseph professor Dr. Jean Kritsky. It's called Brood 10, the Cicada Podcast. You want to check that out at wvxu.org. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our engineer today is Rick Andress. And I am Michael Monks. We'll try to talk again tomorrow.